case for argument is Johnson v. Scott. Ms. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. My name is Eileen Smith from Christopher Myers & Associates, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Antonio Johnson, in this excessive force case. This case is currently on...
Was he injured when the dog bit him?
Yes, Your Honor.
What happened?
Did the dog
break the skin?
I do not believe there were serious injuries. There was pain, some puncture wounds. He didn't have lasting injury, however, or any crippling injury.
But the dog's teeth did puncture his skin, did you say?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
There are three issues I'd like to address today. The first is whether the lower court erred in granting summary judgment where there were material questions of fact as to the justification of allowing a police dog to bite and hold on to a suspect after that suspect had stopped fleeing, had raised his hands in surrender and given up the chase and surrendered to the officer. I'd also like to address whether the Sergeant Scott's use of force thereafter was excessive under the circumstances, and also the issue of qualified immunity. Now, the facts in this case, if taken in a light most favorable to my client, who is the non-moving party at summary judgment, show that although at the time Sergeant Scott was pursuing my client on foot, my client was running away, thereafter surrendered. At no time during this foot chase with Officer Scott did my client try to conceal himself or hide himself.
I'll tell you what bothers me about your theory. It seemed to me that you did concede that Mr. Johnson was driving recklessly. He's running all these stop signs. He leaps over the chain link fence. The dog is running behind him, and we get to the point where he gets up against the fence, turns around, puts his hand up in the air, and your theory seems to be that Officer Scott should have called the dog off at that point. But I have done some quick and rough math, and German Shepherds can run probably at about 20 miles an hour, and there are about 8 feet between the dog and the fence at that point. The dog at that point, as my calculation suggests, is moving at a rate of 28 feet per second. The thought that the officer can call the dog off is fanciful. I mean, the dog is running too fast. He's up against the fence. And his use of the dog up to that moment, it seems to me you've conceded, is reasonable. So I don't see why he can't. You know, the dog gets there, a very short period of time then ensues as he's brought under control. How can we say that this was not a reasonable use of force?
Well, first, Your Honor, it's an inference as to whether a trained police dog who has the training to know to deploy and run after a suspect can't be heeled and told to stop.
Can't. It's a matter of physics. If the dog is going 28 feet per second, the dog, it's not like a cartoon. You know, he can't just sort of freeze in mid-leap. He's got to decelerate somehow. There's just no way.
Your Honor, again, that's an assumption. There's no expert testimony on here.
It's just the math. I mean, that's how fast those dogs run.
When he caught up with your client, how many times did he bite?
I don't know how many times he bit total. Initially, he grabbed a hold of the arm and held a hold of it. By the time Mr. Johnson was on the ground, he was still biting on the arm. I do not know whether he was biting and releasing repeatedly on that arm during the handcuffing process or just kept a hold and would not let go.
Were all the bites on the arm?
No, Your Honor. My client was also bitten on the one of the legs during the handcuffing process.
So your real argument is that at some point, after he surrendered, he put his hands up, that either the dog on his own or the dog at the prompting of the officer should have ceased attacking the man.
Correct. He should have been called off from my client.
Your reply brief doesn't mention the government's argument about the discrepancy between the affidavit and the deposition testimony, and that portions of the affidavit were struck, and that your appeal doesn't challenge that?
Correct, Your Honor. We accept the... I'm sorry?
Do you have anything you want to say about that?
No, Your Honor. We accept the lower court's decision on that particular issue.
What does that leave you with the case, though?
Well, there's still...
The deposition didn't mention the dog biting him after he was handcuffed.
What it does, however, address is the dog biting him when he was surrendered. He was no longer fleeing. He was allowed to continue with the bite after he was still surrendered, but now on the ground being struck repeatedly by the officer.
But isn't this a matter of seconds? I thought the officer was trying to get the handcuffs on. Of course, the dog is still biting one arm. I understand that there's a problem there, but...
10 to 20 seconds is still a long time when you have a sharp object holding onto your arm, biting into it, causing
but
pain.
But the dog, he's not going to let the dog release the fellow until he's handcuffed. That would be imprudent, wouldn't it?
That is an issue of material fact for a jury to decide under the circumstances.
I don't believe that. You can't have some rule that the dog must release the person before he's handcuffed. That's back to square one. He can take a whack at the police officer if the dog isn't clamping him.
Even if my client had not been fleeing, by that theory, any suspect who's being handcuffed should have a dog chewing on him, because there's always that...
If he's a violent person, now, not if he's being arrested for securities fraud, presumably.
Nevertheless, in the cases that the lower court relied upon for the position that it was not always necessarily excessive force for a dog to bite a suspect who had been fleeing, either the suspect was still actively fleeing at the time of the bite, or when he fled, he got out of the sight of the pursuing officer and tried to seclude himself or hide himself. And at the time, the dog was used to ferret out the suspect and then had to bite the suspect and hold him until the officer actually was there.
Smith, help me with further elaboration on Judge Posner's earlier inquiry. What was in the affidavit that was not in the deposition?
I believe in the affidavit, Mr. Johnson said that during the handcuffing process, the dog started out at his arm, then went down to his leg, and then also, I believe, back to his arm. In the affidavit, in the deposition, my client didn't address anything as far as the dog going back to the arm or specifically biting him after he was fully handcuffed.
So it ends with the handcuffing in the deposition, am I right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Are you limiting your argument then to what happened up to the point of handcuffing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Smith. Mr. Keane?
May it please the Court. I believe you've touched on the critical issue which supports our position that summary judgment in this case was properly granted. And that is that until Mr. Johnson was secured with the handcuffs, he was still a threat and danger to this officer. It's important that the court understand that the circumstances of this pursuit involved someone who was alleged to be involved in a shooting which had just occurred at a nightclub a few minutes before this vehicle was involved in the vehicular pursuit. So Sergeant Scott had every reason to believe that this was the suspect that was involved in a shooting and likely would be armed in the course of this pursuit. And we have a vehicular pursuit and then a lengthy foot pursuit that involved jumping over a chain link fence and running into the backyard in a very dark area after midnight. At that point, the only reason that the suspect is surrendering is because he's cornered in a place where he can't continue to flee. The fact that he turns at that moment and says, "I give up," and as you've noted, the dog is right behind him running full speed, and lunges at his arm as he's trained to do to take him down, there's insufficient time for Sergeant Scott to make any reasonable determination that he was really surrendering and there was an opportunity to peacefully handcuff him without any force at all. The entire event, from the dog grabbing hold of his arm until he's handcuffed, according to the plaintiff, is no more than 20 seconds. Once he's handcuffed, the plaintiff concedes now, as he did in his deposition, that there was no force at all used. No biting by the dog was immediately called off by Sergeant Scott. There were no blows struck, no force used of any kind. So we have a circumstance where the officer, when presented with a fleeing suspect in a shooting, a felony suspect who's already also committed additional felonies by fleeing in his vehicle from the officer, is using reasonable force to apprehend him, to take him into custody, and to do so in the least intrusive way that is protective of his safety, the officer's safety under these circumstances.
Why could not the officer have called the dog off, but had the dog remain on alert until the handcuffs were secure? Once the man was on the ground, the officer has his knee on the man's back. It seems to me that at that point, you don't need to have an animal biting the man. What's the answer?
The evidence with respect to that is that once he was down on the ground, there was a struggle, and that the suspect struggled and resisted the efforts to handcuff him. Now, the suspect says that's because the dog was biting him, but there's no way for the officer to know that's the reason why he's resisting. And so as soon as he gets the handcuffs on both arms secured behind his back, he immediately calls off the dog.
There was no communication between the suspect and the officer about the fact the dog was still biting.
Well, the officer said stop resisting to the man. Again, he doesn't know what his intent is when he's struggling on the ground with him for this very brief amount of time. For all he knows, he's struggling to get away and avoid being handcuffed and fighting with the officer.
Was there any evidence as to what the standard operating procedure is? Whether the dog is trained to stop actually biting once the man is on the ground? What does the dog react to?
There was no evidence in the record with respect to that issue. The officer wasn't deposed, and simply his version of the events was presented by affidavit in support of the motion for summary judgment. So there is no evidence in the record about a standard policy. But based upon the affidavit, it's clear that the dog continued to hold on to the suspect until he was called off by a command from Sergeant Scott.
So we have no evidence with respect to either the training given the dog or the training given the officer?
That's correct. There's nothing in the record about that either way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Ms. Smith as well. And our next case for